the Minnesota House Committee on Early Childhood Finance and Policy. And we know that people have had some trouble getting here with the very snowy night, so we want to thank you, but we also want to try to keep the hearing going on time. So members, thank you for coming. We know it was very slow going here tonight, and to the audience, we know it was probably somewhat of a trek for you to get here tonight, so we very much appreciate you being here. Well, you may say to yourself, I'm Nora Slawick, and I'm chair of the Minnesota House Committee on Early Childhood Finance and Policy. And you might think, why are we here? Why are we here in Bloomington, and why do our committees go out on the road at the Minnesota House? Well, there's really three reasons. First of all, it's really good for us as legislators to be out of the Capitol. Often we spend too much time in the Capitol talking to each other, and what we really need to be doing is being out in the community, out talking with folks like you, hearing about the innovations in Bloomington and Edina, and seeing what's happening out in the field. So that's one of the reasons that we are here. Second of all, we have the vice chair of the committee, Representative Paul Rosenthal, who is from Bloomington, and so we wanted to come out and visit Bloomington and see what you're doing. We've heard great things. You've been telling us about what's happening, so we're eager to see what's happening with early childhood programs here. And third, we know that you know this, but we also want to emphasize the importance of early childhood programs. We know that the best investment the state can make is in our youngest citizens. We're going to save all that money on special ed costs, remedial costs, juvenile justice costs, as well as help our youngest kids get ready for school. So we're eager to hear what you have to say tonight. What we'd like to do, I'm going to have Representative Rosenthal go next and welcome you, and then Representative Lencheski. Then we will have the committee members introduce themselves, and then we will start with a testimony. First, we will have Dr. Cheryl, is it Guinness?
Guinness.
And then we will have Catherine Ziola after that. So with that, I will turn over to Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my name is Paul Rosenthal. I'm the Vice Chair of the Early Childhood Committee, and I represent West Bloomington and Southern Edina. I actually live on the Edina border. So I live in Edina, but I represent both communities, and I'm really happy to see so many people out here tonight. It's one of these issues that is nonpartisan, that we all understand that the investment in early childhood pays off tenfold, 18-fold down the road, and very happy that there's people from Edina and Bloomington. I'm happy to see members of the committee, Representative Lencheski, who I sit next to on the floor. It's nice to see you again. And we're just really here to listen and to hear about all the great things that are happening in both Bloomington and Edina. And I want to welcome all of you and look forward to hearing your testimony.
Well said. Representative Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you all for being here. And to my colleagues who aren't normally in this room, some of you are, thank you for being here. And we've got the K-12 chair here as well, and so this is a really great event. And I want to personally really thank Representative Rosenthal, who's responsible for this. Representative Rosenthal is the vice chair of this committee, got our great chair of this committee, Representative Slawick, to come on out to hear from people in Bloomington and Edina. So that's just wonderful, and I really want to thank him for his leadership on that. If I may, I want to just take a second to not ask them to come and speak, but to recognize the Bloomington School Board members who are in the room. I want to first say that School Board Director Arlene Bush was just here and had to leave. And new School Board Member Melissa Halverson-Wicklund is right there, and she's in the room. And I just saw School Board Member Maureen Bartolotta right there. So if we see any more come in, I'll recognize them then, if that's okay. But just also Superintendent Fujitaki and Tom Holton, the governor's appointee in this very important issue area. Really glad you're all here tonight. Thank you so much to the community for coming out.
Great. Well, it is great to be here, and thank you, Representative Lencheski, who also, of course, chairs our tax committee, not the House, so we appreciate everything that you do. Next, we'll have our K-12 chair introduce herself. Last night in the House, we had a Race to the Top hearing that was co-chaired, really chaired by Representative Greiling, so we're very glad you're here.
Yeah, thank you very much, and good evening. This is the first time I've come to Bloomington, where it took me an hour to get here from Roseville. I don't know why people either speed on the freeway or, like tonight, go 10 miles an hour. But I'm very pleased to be here as the K-12 chair. I also am thrilled to also be on the Early Childhood Committee. Some people think that Representative Slawick and Representative Rosenthal and the members of the Early Childhood Committee and K-12 compete against each other, and that is absolutely not true. We know in K-12 that if early childhood isn't well done and well funded, that we then have to deal with the impossible achievement gap that can never be made up if we haven't had good early childhood. So I'm pleased to be here in this community. And I just want to say, Representative Lincheski, that you know school board member Arlene Bush, I'm sure, just as well as I do. And being the person that she is, she greeted Representative Slocum and I in the parking lot as she went on to her next activity. So you're well represented by her and the legislators in this area. Thank you for all being here.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Well, let's start with this side. We have representative from this area, Representative Downey, if you want to introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm Keith Downey. I'm the state representative from District 41A, which is the other side of Edina from Paul Rosenthal. So greetings from north of the border here. I, too, serve on the Early Childhood Committee. I also serve on the K-12 Policy Committee and the Higher Ed Workforce Development Committee. So I kind of have that entire P20 cradle to grave spectrum in the committee duties that I have, and that's actually a very valuable perspective to have as you look at the continuum of learning and lifelong learning more broadly. So really glad to be here. I know Rick Dressen, our superintendent from Edina, was here on a phone call, I'm sure something important, and I'm not sure if there's any other board members or not, but really pleased to see the Edina early ed community here tonight, and I'm looking forward to them getting a chance to share with a broader audience the good things that we're doing in our community, that they are doing in our community on behalf of early childhood. So thank you.
Great, thank you.
Hi, I'm Linda Slocum. I represent Eastern Richfield and Eastern Central Bloomington, and I am on the E-12 Finance Committee, was on the Policy Committee. I'm not on Early Childhood, but I've always supported early childhood very strongly. And the data sure proves that it's where you make the difference in the achievement gap. And I'm a teacher, classroom teacher. In fact, I just spent today teaching, and yesterday, and the day before that. I teach eighth graders, and I see what the achievement gap is all about. And so I feel that if we can do anything to improve kids' ability to succeed, that we need to do it. I've had the honor of touring and being at Pond Center, and I've seen some of the things that they do. It's phenomenal. It's just phenomenal. I love that place. It's great. So it's great to be here.
Thank you. And next we have who's one of the co-chairs of the Early Childhood Caucus. I wonder if you would like to introduce yourself. We do allow senators to come to the House meetings. Introduce yourself. And also, if you could talk a little bit about the caucus, maybe.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm the guy crashing the House committee hearing tonight. I'm State Senator Jeff Michel, and I represent West Bloomington and Edina. So thank you all for coming. And, Madam Chair, thank you for extending the invitation. This is, I think this hearing and this gathering is another example, I think, of how early childhood education issues and just the topic is one of the few things. I wish there were more things, but it's one of the few issues at the Capitol that does tend to bring together a bipartisan discussion, flavor, and group of perspectives. And so I know a lot of you in this room are repeaters. You're kind of trailing us as we go through this early childhood exercise over the last couple years. So the Early Childhood Caucus has continued to grow and to meet. We've had road trips. We've been working with the business community. We've been working with the nonprofit community, who's been putting together some strategies. So even in a really difficult economic environment, I'm optimistic that we're going to be able to come together on some frameworks and some kind of outlines of how we can take another small step and then another small step together on this topic. So Madam Chair, you have come to some role model communities when it comes to early childhood, and this will be a great set of testimony today. So thanks again for letting me be a part of this.
Well, we're glad you're here, and we are excited to hear about what's happening in your district. Before we start the testimony, I just want to take just a minute and thank the people that helped plan this event. I know that Tom Holton was really spearheaded it, and can those who planned it raise their hands and let us know, and could we... There's some folks here. Well, we want to thank you for doing that, for your work. Let's thank them. And also, I know, and maybe Tom can name them later when he's testifying, as well as I know the staff, Sarah Benskover, who's a committee administrator for the House Committee on Early Childhood Finance and Policy, and Matthew Colley, who's the legislative assistant. We very much appreciate their work. It's different. They're used to setting up hearings down the hall, and it's a little different coming out to a district. So we are glad to be here. With that, we will start with the testimony. We want to welcome you to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Cheryl Gunnis. I currently co-chair Edina Partners for Early Education, currently known by our acronym EPI. We really began our work 3.5 years ago when Doug Johnson assembled a group of community volunteers to plan an informational breakfast about early education for Edina business and community leaders. And the response after that event, we had over 200 participants who were all very eager for some action and very engaged with the data. And we determined that we needed to form an ongoing community-oriented group that would serve as a focal point for all of that community energy and to serve as a bridge and a meeting place where all the different groups and individuals who have some stake in early education in our community could come together, meet, find common ground, and create some innovative partnerships to move both the concept and the practice of early education forward in our community. So we've been at this for a little over 3 years, and we've learned a lot and been able to reflect on how a community-led volunteer group can be effective in advancing this issue in a particular community. So I'd like to share just a couple of approaches that I think make our group and our work unique, and maybe offer some direction and inspiration for other communities around the state and also for your work as legislators. First off, I see that one of the most valuable roles that a group like EPI can take on is to advocate strongly for early education as a community-wide issue. Very often when I hear people talking about early education, it's defined very narrowly either as a school's issue or a parent issue. On one hand, getting kids, you know, doing the things that will get kids ready just for school, or talking about the community as being relevant or important in supporting children and their families only when they're struggling with one or more risk factors. And so really, our work has taught us that there's a great deal to gain in terms of community support if we talk a little less about school readiness and maybe a little more like something about community readiness for all preschools. I think we need to keep our eye on the big picture, and that is that we're not educating students to get ready for school. We fund public education so that they can emerge from those walls ready to engage fully and thoughtfully in our society. And we really believe that a young child's very earliest experiences matter not only to them as individuals or to the schools that they attend, but to the neighborhoods that they live in, to the community they'll eventually work in, and to our democracy itself. So a few ways that we've tried to really broaden the idea of early education to elevate it as a community-wide priority and shared value. First of all, it's just the makeup of our committee member. We have about 15 or 20 people working hard on this issue in Edina. Of course, the public schools and area preschool teachers are an important part of that team, but we're really relying on parent volunteers. We have grandparents. We have Chamber of Commerce. We have realtors. We've recruited high school students to help us on events. We've formed other working relationships with the city, with the faith community, with the arts community, the medical community. We all have things to gain, and so we think it's crucial to our success that we have all those people at the table. We, of course, do a lot of research, of outreach. We have a new website we're very proud of. You can check it out at edinapartnerselyed.org. We've organized several informational breakfasts. Both are aimed at... We try to help participants understand that it's important not only to invest money in early childhood education, understanding that we're going to get that investment back, but that we also need to invest time. We're working to instill the idea that every adult in the community who relates to a child can be a teacher, and we can extend and support the very good work that parents do and that early education providers do. But the role of the community can be to give children the opportunities to practice being good neighbors and good citizens, whether that's letting them open the door for you at the library or push the elevator button, or something that Lori Dunn and I worked on recently was letting preschoolers pack meals for children who are starving in Haiti. All of those things are examples of ways that community members can help successfully integrate young people into community life one step at a time, because certainly parents and even teachers can't do this alone. And by giving children these opportunities and supporting them well, we not only improve our current quality of life, because children who are well supported are fun to be around, but we're also ensuring that our community continues to be a place that people want to live. And Edina, of course, according to Family Circle magazine, is one of the 10 best towns to raise a family in. And a related and exciting outreach direction that we're working on now is that Edina is not only a place that's great to raise a family, but it's a great place to grow old. We have one of the largest populations of people who are over 65. And in the past year, Edina's Community Education Services has been running some seminars and workshops aimed to help people explore how to live the second half of life with meaning and purpose. But I think we were all surprised that the main thing that came out of those discussions is that those people are craving meaningful intergenerational opportunities, and they really want to be involved with the young people. And so EPI is looking at ways to connect our early education initiative with an older adult initiative. So we're trying to identify issues and challenges that affect both groups, and there are a lot of them. They could include transportation, affordable housing, livable and walkable communities, just park benches and places to sit down and chat. And all these are examples where those two groups can collaborate, and we want to look at those two groups as resources for one another rather than two groups who are competing against each other for a limited resources in some kind of zero-sum game. And so we're very excited about the possibilities for that. I know I have short time, so I'm going to jump to just one more general way that I think a community-based group like EPI can be valuable and effective. And that is that a group like ours that's run by volunteers who are energetic but by no means an expert, I think we can provide a kind of nudge or a push to ask expert entities in our community to work together, even though they're not used to working together, to come up with some innovative collaborations and partnerships to solve identified problems. So my favorite example of this is we identified a problem. We all know from the 2006 Minnesota Governor's Summit on School Readiness and from personal experience that we have a long way to go in the area of transitioning smoothly from pre-K to kindergarten. And we thought that this is a challenge that we should be working on locally in Edina. So last year, EPI was sort of instrumental in pushing the idea and getting it started, but it was really the public schools teaching and learning staff that headed up a pretty remarkable collaborative project. The first step was they gathered all the Edina public school teachers to look over the Minnesota Department of Education kindergarten standards and the state early childhood indicators of progress. Go over those groups, distill them, and figure out which are really the most important standards in our community. And then EPI was able to organize other early education providers in our community, many of them private preschool providers. We got over 50 attendees at that meeting, 12 area preschools, some in-home daycare providers. And at this two-hour practitioners symposium, these early educators got expert insight into the standards from public school staff. They got to take home a copy of the indicators of progress, which many of them did not have or had not seen. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but they got to know each other. And they formed this community of practice, and now we've had a second one on kindergarten screening. And a third is planned. And so I think this is a really interesting collaboration between the public schools, private preschools. They don't often get to talk to each other. The individual preschool teachers don't often get a chance to talk to each other, and I think it's been a real success. And working on that model, we're next going to attack trying to develop our network with healthcare providers. We're going to start looking at all the different screening tools that pediatricians use. They're all very different. Parents and educators don't often understand what those are. Some are better at identifying specific challenges than others. So we're going to bring that model to the medical community next. So in closing, one suggestion that I would leave you with is that you might want to think about ways to formalize support for community-based groups like EPI. It seems clear that no one set of approaches is going to work for every community, although it's clear that support and understanding about the role of early education is crucial in every community. So groups like EPI can help broaden thinking about the role and purpose of education, preventing program providers from getting too bogged down in details or too territorial or protective about their particular turf or program. We can help to keep the focus on the big picture about the kind of community that we all want to live in. And we may, in fact, be your most valuable tool for ensuring that the public policy that you set and the programs you support actually live up to their potential and promise by having some local collaboration, leveraging local resources, providing local accountability, and a lot of local energy and resources can be poured into enhance and sustain these programs into the future.
Great, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Members, we have time for, after each one, a couple of minutes for questions. If there's any questions, and then we'll introduce. We had another member join us. My comment would be that it's very interesting to see your collaboration, and those are issues that we really need to do better at. School connections between kindergarten and preschool is something as at the state level we're struggling with. We have some pilot programs, but nothing statewide, and also how to collaborate on the screening programs. And if, you know, there's a current one, but that's very basic, but you know what doctors are doing in healthcare, so it's very interesting and something we know we could improve upon. So, thank you for your testimony. Any questions, Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and Dr. Gunness. I'm obviously quite familiar with the things that you're doing. I'm curious whether, as you're coming out of some of the facilitated sessions that we've had and kind of refining your vision and solidifying that, do you have any kind of a long-term vision for what your group could evolve to? Do you see it actually in program delivery or kind of high-touch case management kind of activities into high-risk families in Edina? What do you see as the future, if any, beyond kind of collaboration and catalysts that you have at present?
Dr. Gunness.
I think we may be more, I'm not sure, you know, I think we've been evolving a lot, but I do think, as the more I think about it, I think we might be more valuable, not as program deliverers and not as experts, frankly, but like being a voice and insisting that people work together and collaborate and that we are getting the kind of programs in Edina that work best in Edina and that we have that flexibility and local control and understand that other communities might need a different approach, and that's okay too, but we're all working to the same goal. I think we might be better off not being program deliverers, but ensuring that we collaborate them and that locally everyone is working together and maximizing our resources.
Okay, good. Any other questions? Thank you for your testimony very much. If you could wait, I think what we'll have is people come up in twos and then change in twos. We have two members joining us, and if we asked surrounding senators to come as well. So, Senator Kielash, if you'd like to, hope I got that right, is key. Okay, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm Senator Ken Kielash. I represent Northeast Bloomington, Richfield, and part of South Minneapolis.
Good. Glad you're here. And Representative Peterson?
Thank you. Representative Sandra Peterson, I represent Plymouth, New Hope, Crystal, and the traffic's very slow.
And Representative Peterson is also a co-chair of the Early Childhood Caucus along with Senator Michelle, so it's a bipartisan, bicameral caucus. We have another member coming in. We'll introduce him in just a minute here. Next, we have testimony from a licensed child care provider. I just want to say to the audience and for those of you that you don't know, and it is the House that has the Early Childhood Committee and the Senate does not. So if you're not familiar with the way the committee works, we are half in the Department of Education, half in the Department of Human Services. So programs we look at in education are things like Head Start, preschool, school readiness, and then in the Department of Human Services are all the child care monies, which is actually a really big part of our budget and very, very important. And I think it's important that we remember that early education isn't just preschool programs or what's happening at home, but it's very much child care, and most of our young kids are in some form of child care. Representative Bly, do you want to take a minute to introduce yourself, and then we'll start with the next testifier.
I'm David Bly from North Dilden, representing North Dilden, and Lonsdale and Belle Plaine.
Good. Glad you're here. You got through the drive okay?
Yeah, it was a little bit hairy, but...
Thanks to all of you. Well, with that, welcome to the committee. Is it Ziola?
Ziola.
Ziola. If you'd like to introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you for this opportunity to testify tonight. My name is Catherine Ziola. I'm from Edina, and I'm a licensed home child care provider through Hennepin County. I have a bachelor's degree in education, and I've been in child care for 25 years. 20 of those years have been out of my home. I originally began my home child care business as a solution to not having to put my own children into child care. I have always been sensitive to parents who are potentially allowing me to be with their children for more waking hours in the week than they will be. The goal of my program has been to provide the kind of environment that I myself would be looking for in child care. My philosophy is that a child's job is to play, and it's my job to provide activities and experiences through this play that challenge their minds and their bodies, and in turn will prepare them for school and for the world around them. It's my approach to work together as a team with the parents of the children I care for. I stress the importance of communication between the two of us so that through our combined efforts, we are setting up their child for success. One of the challenges I find working with parents is their lack of knowledge when it comes to what their child should be learning at what age. Working parents whose time is already challenged are really looking to me to give them direction in this area. A few years ago, I had a boy in my care, and I'll call him Peter, whose parents had no idea what they should be expecting from him as far as his behavior, his learning capabilities, his social skills, and so on. Peter was their first child, and they really had no experience to draw from. What was really troubling is that his mother was a competent nurse. Somehow I thought that that would qualify her to know more than she did about her child. I had noticed when Peter was about 15 months old that something did not seem right, and it was now my responsibility to communicate this to his parents and point them in the right direction on where to get him help. I wasn't really sure myself where to go, and so I first turned to my school district to find out what course of action I should take. Unfortunately, Peter lived in a different school district, so then I started making calls there. Eventually, I found out the proper procedure and gave Peter's parents all the information that I had found. And after many evaluations, Peter was diagnosed with a sensory disorder, and he received the therapy that he needed. He's now 5 and will start kindergarten next fall back on track. I am a resourceful provider, but what if I wasn't? Where would Peter be with starting school in the fall? Last spring, I was invited to a free symposium for teachers and caregivers of pre-kindergartners to learn about Minnesota's early learning standards and how we could integrate these standards into our work with children, which you had spoken of. This was put on by the Edina Public Schools and ABC Partnering for Early Education. This was an excellent symposium, but sadly, I think I was one of the only home child care providers who attended. Being a home child care provider can be similar to feeling like you're on an island because there are few support systems built in. The less experienced provider has no one around them to give them this type of needed information. The only way a provider is going to get support and increase their knowledge in this area is to be determined to find it for themselves. This symposium was an excellent way to equip me, to make me feel like a valued and an important player in the early education of children, as well as respected by other early educators who work in more formal settings in my community. As you have heard by my story about Peter, what we know as providers can make all the difference in children's school readiness as well as catching problem areas early so the children get the help they need and don't fall behind. In conclusion, I believe finding ways to provide more support and education for early educators would include home, which would include home child care providers, would be great. This additional support would not only increase the quality of service that we provide, but more importantly, increase the school readiness of the children in our care. Thank you.
Thank you. Excellent testimony. It is really a testament to your skills and your knowledge of how you're able to get involved in there and help Peter get ready for school and really to talk to his parents. I think that's something a lot of people don't realize, that child care providers, they're really getting a small glimpse of the family through this child and what's happening at such an important time. So your role is very, very important.
Thank you.
Members, do you have any comments? Okay. Well, thank you both for being here and for sharing your stories and your lives with us.
Thank you.
Next, we will have Tom Holton and Kay Miller to come up. While they are coming up, we do have some of our other staff here, and I wanted to introduce them as a committee in the Minnesota House of Representatives. We have a fiscal analyst, who's Emily Adrians, if you want to raise your hand. Emily does all the work of the numbers, so we have a lot of numbers to crunch from Department of Ed and Department of Human Services, about $400 million, or a little more than that, that goes into early childhood. So we appreciate her work. And Danielle is here, who I always want to say Pugnelli, but Lemire, who is with research and helps research our issues and keep us on track in terms of where we're going in the Minnesota House. So thank you both for being here tonight. They both have young children. Yes, and we have another school board member, Representative Cherilyn Chesky, tells me. So
yes, Director Tim Culver has come in, another Bloomington school board member is right over there. So we're glad you're here.
Good. Thanks. Well, we'd like to welcome Tom Holton. Now, I serve with Mr. Holton on the Governor's Advisory Council, and I have to say he has been just a great member of that council and has also been very helpful with organizing events like this and helping us at the state when we're trying to understand different issues. He is someone that I turn to on a number of different levels. So very much appreciate you will go first, and then we will have Kay Miller from the Bloomington Schools go second.
Representative Slawick, Representative Rosenthal, members of the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee, other members not on the committee, even senators are welcome here, and our great turnout from the public. Isn't it wonderful to see people that are truly interested in this issue in our community? As Representative Slawick said, I am Tom Holton, Executive Director of Community Education for Bloomington and Richfield Public Schools, and also a member of the Governor's Council on Early Education and Care. Thank you, first of all, for choosing Bloomington as a site for this public hearing. On behalf of our school board, staff, and community, I'd like to officially welcome you to Bloomington. And before I get into my official testimony, it was a couple of months ago when Representative Rosenthal approached me and others and said, can you help find some testimony for a public hearing we're going to have? And really the most difficult thing to do, because we're talking about a system that has so many parts, was how in 45 minutes or so are we going to fit all that testimony? So we could have had legions of people come up here talking about all the parts of the system that serve Bloomington, Richfield, and Edina. So we had a limit tonight and pick some of the highlights and hope you'll hear more about the other things we do in another time. Bloomington and Richfield have a long tradition of being a leader in the support and development of programs for early learners. In addition to my testimony tonight, you will hear from an early childhood program coordinator and two parents who are program participants. And since it's in our town, rather than each do 5 minutes, I'm going to do a couple and then tag team with Kay, and then you'll hear some from parents. And maybe you could ask all the questions of Bloomington schools when you're done. We feel privileged to share some of our successes as well as some of the challenges we face as we build an early education system that assures all our children come to kindergarten prepared to be successful in school. As you make decisions in the upcoming legislative sessions, you'll be doing it with an economic challenges for the state that are unprecedented in my 34 years as a community educator. You will be also making your decision in a time when the demographic makeup of our communities and the corresponding education needs are changing at an ever-accelerating rate. I do believe, as many of you do, that if we are to be successful with all of our learners, we must start early, be strategic how we invest our resources, and have confidence in the ever-mounting body of evidence regarding the importance and value of early learning and early care. Quality care and education does increase school success, create cost savings by decreasing future social ills, and bolsters the long-term health of our state economy. In our testimony, we will focus on some of the keys to our success and what we have done to assure all kids come to school prepared to learn. Some of the critical components of what we do here in Bloomington, and we're not alone in this, but since we're here, we'll brag about us tonight. In our communities, parents have choices and information to select early care and education programs to meet the needs of their child and family. Many families braid multiple programs together to create learning options that meet their particular learning, care, and needs. We'd like to talk to you about success with our at-risk learners. We have been successful with our most at-risk learners, who require programs that are of greater intensity and duration than what is required for learners with fewer or no risk factors. The Bloomington School Board uses readiness as a success indicator when measuring our progress on eliminating the achievement gap. Quality. We deliver high-quality programming based on the research of best practices and outcome data that supports effectiveness of what we are doing. And then we like to think we have comprehensive services that involve many partnerships, and you've heard about some of those that are going on in Edina. We build successful partnerships with parents, community agencies, nonprofits, medical providers, child care providers, Head Start, other governmental agencies, and the faith community to assure that our dollars are invested wisely and we can provide the best programs and support systems for all of our learners. We understand that an increasing number of our children have basic needs that, when unmet, become impediments to learning. When this is where we enlist the help of our community partners to increase the odds that our children will come to school ready to learn. One example, just this fall, Fairview Health Systems opened a children's clinic at our family center at Pond. They're providing medical care for children, including free care of those who have no insurance or no ability to pay. Just this week, with Washburn Child Guidance, we added mental health care for children, and we have plans to add dental care as well, all provided by other providers, understanding that the school can't do it alone. These are just a couple of the examples of the many community partners who are working with the district and supporting our most needy families. Now I'd like to introduce Kay Miller, our Childhood Coordinator of Bloomington Richfield Community Education Department, to give you some information about our program model and the success we've had with our most at-risk learners.
Welcome to the committee. Members, I just want to also mention, if you didn't know, we're on television live right now, and it will be replayed, so if you have any questions, make sure you speak into your mics. I have been out to visit as well and been very impressed with your program, so eager to hear what you have to say.
Thank you. Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Kay Miller, and for over 20 years, I've had the pleasure of serving as lead teacher and now as coordinator of the Bloomington Richfield Early Childhood Family Center, which provides the majority of Bloomington and Richfield's early learning and parenting programs. I've also taught primary grades in elementary schools and directed a community preschool in North Minneapolis. In my time with the Family Center, we have worked hard to successfully respond to the changing demographics and resulting needs of our community. At the same time, I want to make sure to acknowledge that we alone could not possibly provide all the early care and education services necessary for all children and their families. We are proud of our partnership with a host of agencies and organizations in the communities we serve. What Mr. Holton laid out for you is the big picture of our differentiated early childhood programs, which have been developed for young children and their families in response to their various needs and circumstances. The ultimate goal of all these programs is to prepare every child with skills necessary to be successful in kindergarten, and that thus puts them on the path to being able to read by the end of third grade. As we often allude to, the Family Center works much like a triage in a hospital in regards to its differentiated services. If you need an aspirin to feel fine, we can provide you with an aspirin. If your needs are greater and you require major surgery, we can also do that. Let me offer some examples of our differentiated early childhood programs. Early childhood screening is for all children ages 3 to 5, so we can identify health and learning issues that can be addressed through referrals before a child enters kindergarten. Early childhood family education, or ECFE, is for parents of children birth to kindergarten age. It provides education and support in child development and parenting. Our school readiness traditional preschool programs are aligned to Bloomington Public School standards and are typically 2 or 3 half-day week programs. They include programs for the average developing child and for many children with special needs as well. We have a family literacy program, which is for English language learner families. Parents receive instruction in English and parenting skills while their children are in early childhood educational settings. Parents and children also spend a portion of their time learning together. It is free and transportation is provided. We also have Early Learners Academy, which is a community education program that provides full-time child care with a preschool component for 3- and 4-year-olds. Parent fees cover the cost of this program. We also work closely with early childhood special education for referrals, consultation, and joint programming. And for families that do not or cannot participate in our programs, we offer parenting and early childhood resources through parent information centers, a website, a parent warm line, and referrals to other programs and agencies as appropriate. The program I will focus on tonight is one of our most challenging yet successful endeavors. Our preschool program targeting children considered at risk for educational achievement. Thanks to focused leadership, committed staff, collaborative partnerships, and grants to help fund the program, we have demonstrated results that our Kinder Prep program and our Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, or MELF program, are meeting the challenges of at-risk preschoolers while closing the achievement gap even before children enter school. Kinder Prep and MELF evolved from a targeted preschool program we developed in 2004 with the aid of a $3 million early reading first grant from the initial No Child Left Behind legislation. At the end of the grant's 3-year funding, we saw compelling results and thus committed to developing a program that would replicate or build on the students' achievements, albeit at a much reduced cost. So we cobbled together state grant monies and community education resources to develop the Kinder Prep preschool program and MELF, which despite its less intensive approach in terms of hours of class time and weeks in the year, and the expense to operate was less, it still yielded results that are very promising. And we'll share some of these results with you in just a few minutes. Who did we serve? We served Kinder Prep in our past MELF served kids who were at risk that had the potential to limit their learning and development for 2 years prior to entering kindergarten. These were typically children from low-income families and English language learners. Currently, we have 162 children in the program, 100% who qualify for free and reduced lunch, and 93% who are English language learners, while another 175 students remain on a waiting list. The waiting list students are not served because of our limited resources. Why did we choose to do these programs? One of the district's goals is to close the achievement gap. Research is very clear on this. The earlier the intervention and targeted efforts to support at-risk children, the more effective schools will be in closing the achievement gap. Providing this jump start to children who generally fall within the lower performing group, our results are showing a narrowing of that achievement gap. Further, we are seeing these students entering kindergarten equal to their peers who are not considered at risk. Another critical measurement for this continued success of students and supported by local, state, and national goals is to have all children reading by the end of third grade. Again, research is very clear that achieving this goal is key to future academic success. Up to third grade, children learn to read. After third grade, children read to learn. How did we do this? First of all, we removed the barriers to accessing programs by providing transportation, language interpreters, and the program at no cost to the participant. We increased the intensity as compared to our other preschools by increasing the length of the school day and the school year. We employed licensed teachers with college degrees, qualified paraprofessionals, and this year and last, Minnesota Reading Corps members who receive continuous and ongoing professional development that includes mentoring and coaching in the classroom. We have small child-to-staff ratios, so children receive individual and small group attention to better meet individual needs as well as large group experience. We create preschool rooms based on research that are literacy-rich and age-appropriate materials and activities to support early literacy and math skills. We implement curriculum and strategies that are research-based and proven to improve student achievement, and we are intentional and explicit in our teaching. We use data-driven instruction through a response-to-intervention model with progress monitoring to help children identify children who are learning and those who are having difficulties, and thus allow us to respond with the appropriate interventions that will help those children to succeed. We include parent involvement and education as a vital component in supporting children's learning. And we make the transition to kindergarten meaningful and successful through better communication between early childhood and kindergarten staff about the children, by aligning curriculum, sharing staff development, and including parents in the transition process. Most importantly, we know from assessments and hard data that this model really works in making a significant difference in preparing children to be successful in kindergarten. Using the individual growth and development indicators, or the IGDI as I'll refer to them now, developed at the University of Minnesota, we looked at target scores that the university normed for children being on the path to reading by the end of third grade. And we looked at three important literacy skills. They found that skills identified in kindergarten are directly related to reading at the end of third grade. This IGDI is a timed test and therefore is especially challenging for our English language learners. Our exciting results from the past 2 years show major growth in all three areas for children from the start of the program to the end. If I don't know if you can see your graph real well, but we've graphed Kinder Prep, which we served 126 children, and MELF, which we served 36 children at two different years. You notice the first bar indicates how many children at the beginning of the year were not reaching the target or were even close to the target. And the blue indicates how many were at target, which was 24, and the tan is 31. Now, out of the 126, the remaining children were not even able to pass the sample questions on the test. Then if you look in the spring, that same group of children, there's 95 children now reached target or were close to target. And again, 70 of those children were on target and 25 were close to target. I think that's just an amazing figure. And then the following year, we get the same kind of growth. Over on the MELF side chart, there's only 36 children. And some of the growth there you can see is larger. That was a program that was more intense in the fact that it was 5 days a week versus 4 days a week, and it went more weeks. In the next slide, we did, this is student tracking. I'm sorry, that was picture naming. This is rhyming. We measured picture naming, rhyming, and alliteration. And again, you see the same sort of pattern with the few number of children who were at target or close to target when they began the program, and again, the growth that happened during that time they were with us. And again, I just want to reiterate again and again, 90% of these children do not speak English or speak English well when they come to us in the fall. And the next one is alliteration, and you'll find the same thing. The IGDE scores show growth, while this slide is a slide of our early kindergarten assessment, which is given to every child in Bloomington the spring before they start school. So this would be more of what I would call, rather than growth, but comparing children's scores for school readiness as they enter our schools. Children's scores in the blue are the kinder prep, the yellow, MELF, and then the grayish-tan bar represents the average the score of all children entering Bloomington kindergarten. You can see the strong similarity in the scores. This really demonstrates that in Bloomington we've closed the gap, that in the fact that there's no significant difference between the scores of the at-risk children who attended our program and the average Bloomington student entering kindergarten. As district leaders, we use a list of success measures to assess how well we are achieving the Bloomington Public Schools strategic plan. In this slide, you will note that one of our measurements is the percentage of beginning kindergarten students scoring at the ready-to-learn level. This is how important this goal is for us. And then in this slide, you see the evidence, as noted in the yellow, that all of our early childhood education programs combined have made it possible to achieve nearly 87% of beginning kindergarten students scoring at the ready-to-learn level. This is an increase over our 2007 results and falls within a superior rating. It also shows room for continued growth, though. Thank you, and I'll turn it back to Tom Holton to wrap up our presentation.
Thank you. And before you would like to bring up your other the parents, and before we have any questions, correct? Okay.
In closing, before our parents speak, I'd like to leave you with a few closing comments. And that is that all children need quality learning experiences to be prepared to start kindergarten ready to learn. Many of these are provided within family structures with the support of schools and daycares, Head Start, and others, and some need much assistance. Early education and care needs are often dictated by economic disparities for our poorest families. With adequate resources, it is possible to be successful with our most challenged learners. If we want to be successful with all of our students, learning needs to take place as part of all early care settings. You heard earlier eloquently the home and family daycare serves, I think, nearly 50% of our students that are in daycare. If we don't support that system, many of our kids won't be ready for school to learn. Our commercial daycares, same case. We need both high-quality care options for all working parents and high-quality early education options for parents who do not need daycare. In all cases, a parent should be at the center of a child's early learning experience. Thank you for your time, and I'd like you to hear about our programs from a parent's perspective. And so now I'd like to introduce Natasha Shahadio, who is a program participant, and we'll conclude with Pam Traylor, who is also a program participant and the chair of our Early Education Advisory Council.
Thank you. As they are transitioning, and very, very impressive numbers, we are going to do another introduction. We have another senator joining us, probably battled the traffic and so forth.
Well, I had a little crisis at work, too, so got it settled, and I'm here. Thank you. I'm sorry I was late, but glad I caught Kay's presentation. It's very good.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Senator Dahl, District 40, this part of Bloomington and into Burnsville.
Great, great. Glad you're here. And I also forgot one staff member, Melva Radke, is here, who is also a researcher with the committee. So appreciate her being here. Well, welcome to the committee. We're eager to hear what you have to say. I think first we are going to have Natasha.
Thank you. My name is Natasha Sahadio, and I'm not only here to testify about how great it's been with my daughter, but I'm here to also brag about that school, that facility, that center, whatever it may call. I have a daughter who attends the Kinder Prep program at Pond Center. And to begin with, I couldn't afford to send my daughter to preschool because I lost my job. And when I called the Pond Center, they gave us that opportunity to have her be there because she is so ready for school. And financially, I couldn't afford to send her, but now she is in. But first of all, I must thank all of you to make that possible for her to be there, to provide that program for her. My daughter is Sarah, and she has changed so much over the months. She just gets up in the morning and gets ready for school, and she's ready for her day to take it on as it comes. But that's not all that I'm so proud of, is the fact that sometimes out of the blues, you will just hear her going with the ABCs and the rhymes and singing those little songs that we probably forget many years ago. You will just hear her going at it, and it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that one too. We used to sing that too. But it's just been such a great opportunity for this child. It makes a difference every day, and not only in my daughter's life, but I'm also the class parent at Indian Mounds, and I'm like the street mom too. And once you just say the name, like Teacher Jeff or Joya or Teacher Galen, they just know exactly who, they have a comment to put in there. And you just turn and you go, okay, all right, you know her, you know them well. And it seems like as soon as you say just Pond Center, everybody knows what you're talking about and the people you're talking about. In that center, they're not just teachers and leaders. They're like role model for your children. I am so willing to send my daughter there to have that part of her leaving us to go to school. For a moment, we thought, okay, we're not sure how it's going to go down. But when she comes home and you're comfortable with sending your child to Pond Center, It's a great blessing having that center there. And today I am just here to plead to you and pray that you do the right thing. But by keep funding that center, it makes a difference every day in children, in parents, in a community. Every day it makes a difference. So I want to thank you, and I pray you continue funding that center. It's a great center. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. You know, the House last year had no cuts to early childhood, and we certainly hope to do that again, right, members? Although it's going to be a very difficult year, as we know. And we only wish every child had the opportunity to have an experience like your daughter's. Because as we know, right now Minnesota does not have a universal preschool program or a preschool for all 3- and 4-year-olds. So it's we're hoping to start with those at risk and eventually be able to have all kids have that opportunity in a few years when there's more money at the state. So thank you for your testimony. Next we'll have Pam Traylor. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you for allowing me to speak to you tonight. My name is Pam Traylor, and I'm the current Early Education Advisory Committee Chair for Bloomington and Richfield Family Center. It's such a mouthful. And more importantly, I am here to represent the families of the so-called typical preschool and ECFE kids in our community. And to the extent that any family can really be defined as typical, I suppose that I represent families that are not English language learners in the middle income range and have children without any identified special needs. And one of the things that, although I'm so proud to be associated with a family center that has made such great strides toward closing the achievement gap with the targeted and intensive preschool programs, I'm really here to speak about the tremendous value that the typical preschool programs and ECFE programs have for families like mine. Two of the areas that I want to talk to are the benefits to the kids, like my kids, and benefits to the families and communities. The kids, they work with in a program that's less intensive, so 5 to 7 hours a week are what my kids went through, and my son's preschool teacher is in the room today, so I'm hoping I represent her as well, Jolene Prestis. And the kids meet 5 to 7 hours of classroom time with the teacher, and the curriculum that they go with has been developed by the Family Center staff in working with also K through 12 staff in targeting specific areas in the curriculum that make sure that the kids are ready to start kindergarten. And I can see with both of my kids that have been through this program, I can see the difference from when they start in the fall and when they're leaving in the spring. And I'm confident that both of my kids, my daughter was fully prepared to start kindergarten, and I'm confident that my son will be in the spring as well. In addition to the curriculum and the qualified licensed teachers in the program, there's also a component of ECFE and school readiness preschool that is really unique to the family center programs, and that is the parent education and parent involvement component. Without parent education and parent involvement, I think we would miss out on this huge opportunity for parents to learn about what the needs of their children are at each developmental stage. And we would also miss out on an opportunity to form networks of parent support. I've been in classes with so many parents of kids my children's age and have formed ongoing friendships, people to turn to for help with my kids, for advice about different things. And I'm also so grateful for the chance to have worked with licensed parent educators who provide support and are able to answer questions, are able to offer information to the parents about things like safety concerns, health concerns, things like early childhood screening, and also to direct us to resources in the community that we might not otherwise have been aware of. A specific example that just happened this week, in fact, my sister's child was just diagnosed with some special needs, and I was talking to my son's preschool teacher, Jolene, about his needs. And she walked me down the hallway and introduced me to an occupational therapist on site and said, "This is the person you need to talk to." We got a meeting set up. I met with her yesterday. She gave me a ton of resources, phone numbers, contact people in the community, and it happened in the space of 3 days. So the preschool programs provide such an amazing contact point because parents are so much more involved probably with their kids' education at the preschool level than they may be throughout the rest of their education simply by the fact that we have to drop them off and pick them up, so we're right there. And so that kind of contact information, referrals and information about resources in the community just provides so much value to families like mine. And because of the teachers and the parent educators and the system in place, although they've made great strides toward closing the achievement gap, for children like my children, there is still an amazing value to be found at the Family Center. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, we or it looks at this point we're going to be a little bit over. We're probably going to go till about 8:15, so I hope that will be okay with the members. I would like to take a couple of questions for the parents and for the Bloomington folks and Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if my question is for the parents or not, but maybe it is, or it could be for many of the testifiers we've had so far. But I think I heard that 50% of the students in the area are in the family and child care, home and family child care, and then there's the preschool. And we heard the testifier from the wonderful home daycare that sometimes home daycare providers are isolated. And I'm wondering what is going on to have some cross-pollinization, since we have such a, you know, half the kids are coming from the daycare. It sounds like we have a really good preschool, and the parents here are testimonial to that. And I just wonder what goes on since half the kids are not in the preschool.
I think Ms. Miller, if you will be answering that.
Okay. Yes, we offer biannually, now it's going to be annually, a class or an event. Actually, it's more of an event evening where daycare providers are invited to the schools, and we have Bloomington kindergarten teachers and then early childhood teachers as well. And we go over the expectations that Bloomington schools have for their children. We provide materials that daycare providers can use in developing those skills with their children. And we this time we're real excited, too, because Bloomington schools, kindergarten and early childhood teachers have developed a DVD on teaching letter sounds and letter names and so on that we will be providing for all the daycare providers. When they come to the event, or if they even just give us a call, that they can use in their home daycares. And this is what they use in all the Bloomington kindergartens. So it's something that's a real connector, we feel that way. We also, from time to time, have daycare providers who are able to take our courses and bring their daycare child or the child that they're taking care of, their one or two children. So we could certainly do a lot more in that area, but and it is one of our goals.
Madam Chair.
Yep, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Is there anything if there is anything, or if you can think of anything right now or later, if you do, that we could be doing at the state level to facilitate that? We have a lot of talk about the quality rating system and how we're trying to have uniform education for, you know, kids, whatever their setting. And we've often thought of child care as babysitting or something, but that's clearly not. Mm-hmm. If it ever was, it certainly isn't anymore, nor should it be. So, you know, any suggestions that you have now or in the future would be appreciated.
Thank you.
There any other questions, members? Representative Downey?
Yeah, if I could, Madam Chair, thank you. And maybe this is for an offline conversation, or maybe there's some additional material you could provide us. I'm curious how you are, I guess two questions, and tell me if this is a longer answer than is appropriate for tonight, but how are you identifying children at risk in communities like Richfield and Bloomington? We were at a conference this fall, and many of the most extreme at-risk elements for kids can oftentimes be kind of buried or hidden within the family setting. So that's one question, how you're identifying these folks. And then second, do you have any kind of longitudinal data from your programs that show the progression of these exact kids through the Bloomington schools? I'd be curious if you've actually tracked that and how far.
Yeah. Ms. Miller.
Yes. As far as identifying children in the community who are at risk, we chose free and reduced lunch and English language learning because from the grant that we had, the national grant, research says that those are two of the main factors as far as kids being at risk for educational achievement. Finding those families, it was not hard. We didn't even really advertise. We worked with public health. We worked with principals at schools. We worked with like MIRA which is our Latino Resource and Referral Service. We, you know, basically that way, and yet we still have 170 families on the waiting list. So it's not like we want to go out and advertise for something, too, that we don't have. And in order to be in the program, you do have to qualify in those areas. And then your second question was on data, longitudinal data following the children. We do have that for our early reading first children. When they are now, our very first cohort is now in third grade. So we're really looking forward to seeing what the end of third grade scores are. We have the data, and we can definitely, we need to do a little more analyzing, but we can definitely get you that information, and we'd be happy to do so.
That'd be great. I'd love to see that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I think that's actually a really good segue to our next testifier. So what I'd like to do is have him come up. We always find we wish we had more time in these, so we appreciate your testimony. That was excellent.
Talk to her about visiting her facility, and if you'd like to come up and say something tonight, we'd love to hear it. Or if you'd like to wait, that's fine, too. Okay.
Okay. We'll fit you in at the end if that sounds good. Okay. Well, welcome to the committee. If you'd like to introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Slowick, Representative Rosenthal, other senators and representatives. I'm Richard Chase from Wilder Research, the Wilder Foundation in St. Paul, and thank you for the invitation tonight. We're here talking about children's school readiness, and I have some early childhood trends that will show to what extent, as a state, we're ready to ensure that the 70,000 babies that are born in the state, that all of them have access to resources and opportunities they need to promote a healthy and promote their health and well-being, which will ultimately promote a healthy state, a multi-ethnic Minnesota, and as you heard from previous speakers, a multi-ethnic, an increasingly multi-ethnic Bloomington and Richfield as well. So it's late, so I'm going to tell you, here's my key messages from the beginning, and then you can see how they show up later. That for the most part, the 286,000 children, I'm talking about kids now 0 to 3. We're not talking about 4 and 5-year-olds. These are before they get to preschool. We have about 286,000. Most are doing well, but 15 to 20% are not doing well. They're vulnerable for some problems. And that vulnerable population is increasing. We have to be concerned about that. There's troubling trends. There have been some reversals and some positive trends over the past several years. They were moving in the right direction, but we've seen them reversed in the past several years. We should be concerned about that. You'll see that in a minute. And then for those of you who are concerned about having good information about how we're doing as a state, we do have a lot of data gaps and a lot of lags, some things we don't know about for 2 or 3 or 4 years because of how data are reported. So the more we can invest in them in a data system that connects data across all these early childhood departments, the more we'll know about children in the state. So the youngest population is the most diverse part of the state. That's where you find the greatest diversity, where we have 23% of the kids 0 to 3 are Hispanic, African American, so a mixed group, Asian, American Indian. That's where the most diversity is in the state, and that's growing. If it wasn't for the 50% increase in the number of births among Latinos, Asians, in African American, and about half of those, by the way, are foreign born, their parents were foreign born, we would not have a growth rate of kids in Minnesota is in the kids of color. Also, there's a baby boom among Indian babies as well in the state. So it's a white kids where the birth rate is basically flat. The number of children of immigrants and refugees grew nearly 200% in Minnesota since 1990, compared to 90% for the U.S. as a whole. So Minnesota is among one of the fastest growing states for immigrant and refugee, or children of immigrants and refugees. Who who's caring for these 70,000 new babies, the 286,000 kids? For the most part, it's their relatives. It's either their grandparents, their parents, other family members, friends. For the most part, 78% of kids three and younger are in family, friend, and neighbor care. One of the hidden problems is maternal depression. 10 to 15% of kids are cared for by a depressed mother. We know that we found in some surveys it's more than a third of the parents report some sort of isolation or problems with their own mental health. For those of you familiar with the home visiting is done through the Metro Alliance, it's in Bloomington and Richfield, part of the your public health department helps pay for that. 53% of those moms are screened positive for maternal depression. So who's caring for the babies? Often it's a mother who's isolated and depressed. And what does that mean for brain development? What does that mean for child development? Those kids are at risk for attachment issues early on. So they may not be prepared for preschool, let alone for kindergarten. What about the economic conditions of these kids? For the most, 63% of those kids, their primary caregivers are in the workforce. So that's why they're using family, friend, and neighbor caregivers if they're not at home with their children. It's affordable. It's more convenient. It's someone they know and trust, especially for those ones that are English language learners. They're learning in their language at home. They have good language skills, but it might not be English language skills. It's Spanish language skills, Somali language skills, and so on. Poverty is going up. It was going down. It's now it's going up. It's up 12% since 2000. It's even worse now, I'm sure, than it was when we got this data in 2008. We're doing a household child care study now for the Department of Human Services. In the past, we've had to oversample for low-income families. We don't have to oversample because so many families are low-income now. It's really sad, and it's going to show up in the next census how the economy has affected the younger families and what's going on with those kids. And that's poverty. Remember, that's $20,000 for a family of four. When you double poverty, the numbers go even higher. So it's even double poverty is pretty poor, $40,000 for a family of four. And it varies by race, ethnicity. The inequities by race and ethnicity show up in all the trends with regard to young kids. So you can see the poverty rates for white families are under 10%, but for American Indian, African American, over 40% of those kids are growing up in poverty, which is a stress factor. It's part of a risk factors that we're talking about. Not just being poor, but the stresses of being poor are part of the problem. But we still have to keep in mind that the sheer number of poor kids are white kids. But the proportions are greater for those other kids. There's some good news. I don't want to be a bearer of bad news. We're doing really great with regard to health insurance right now for our youngest kids. 97% of our youngest children are covered by some form of health insurance, and about a quarter of them is through what we have is in Minnesota, the public option. Right, so it's a good thing that we have the health insurance coverage for kids. Prenatal care trends. We tend to be a bit above average with the national average with regard to access to prenatal care, but it's not true for all pregnant women, where it's best for the white pregnant mothers. Look at, again, the American Indian families, 45% have access to prenatal care. But again, the number of sheer numbers are still the white babies, pregnant mothers with have the largest number of that have no access to prenatal care at the present. Almost 9,000 babies with no access to prenatal care. Some more good news. We had legislation, and the hospitals cooperated and were in pushed this newborn screening, and we have a very high proportion of kids that are screened in the hospital, particularly for hearing loss. It's gone up from 5 years ago from 82% to almost 100% of those newborns are screened. But something happens after they're screened, when we find there's problems, there's follow-up problems after that happens. The same thing you'll find with well baby visits. This is for low-income families on the public option. If they get their first well baby visit, but then the follow-up for the subsequent visits falls off. You can see it's upwards of 90% for the first visit, but it goes down to only about 2/3 for American Indian families for this later visits, 3/4 for other families. So what is happening with regard to access, transportation, the delivery of service that is so it's not what are the families doing, but what is a service system doing does not enable the families to access it, even though they have insurance? What is going on with regard to the delivery of that service?
You know, we're probably going to have, do you have,
I have
a couple
faster?
More minutes?
Yeah. Okay. All right. We also don't have enough Head Start slots. You can see there's been because of the growth of low-income families, we have fewer families who are eligible for achieving Head Start. Infant mortality was okay. It's getting worse, especially for American Indian babies. Immunizations were going up. Now they're going down. Asthma hospitalizations for kids were going down, now going up. Child maltreatment, worse than it was 10 years ago. And the increase is in the youngest kids. Think about isolated families. That's what happens in isolated families where you get child maltreatment. So, how many kids are we talking about here? There's no way to know in an unduplicated way because we don't have a good enough way to look at the data unduplicated. But if you look at the numbers, sheer numbers, there are 43,000 at least kids right now, 3 and younger, with a depressed mom. 43,000 at least who are at moderate or high risk for developmental delays. Double the ones that are at teen moms. We're concerned about teen moms, but we should be more concerned about depressed moms, I think. Now what? It's a demographic imperative for this state. The only growth we have is in the communities of color. We have to do something to ensure that they have access to resources and opportunities like all kids. That's where the growth is in the state. Look at the white population. It's going to go down. We have to think in an integrated way. We have to figure out how we can connect the services across the departments, whole child, whole family, whole community. Can't just be one problem at a time. We have to think comprehensively. How can we screen for maternal depression during the well baby visit, for example? How can we make sure we can get those kids the help they need as well as the help their parents need? Health, income, and education are inextricably intertwined. If you're low income, you're more likely to be undereducated and sick. If you're sick, you're more likely to be low income and undereducated. They all go together. So what do you do for these kids, the vulnerable kids ages 3 and younger? It seems to me when we're talking about that, we could start with the access to health. You saw the indicators of health that were going up. Now they're going down. If these kids, we don't address the health care access and health care needs of these kids early on in the depression of their parents, they're not going to be ready for preschool, let alone for kindergarten. I think I rushed through and I'm probably done. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I know from the last presentation I've seen you give, there's much more to this. And I think, members, it's just a heads up to us of kind of what's coming. And part of our job here at the legislature is we're going to have to deal with the crisis as it comes this coming year. But we also have to look down the road and see what's coming. So we very much appreciate that. We are going to have to move forward with Sandy Vargas. And so, members, I would say afterwards, if you have questions, or Dr. Chase is very available by email and so forth, so we could follow up. Thank you for being here. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Vice Chair, committee members, representatives, and senators. And I also want to acknowledge all of the expertise in the room, because I know that there is much expertise. I also want to introduce Karen Kelly Ariwula, who is the Vice President of the Minneapolis Foundation, has done a tremendous amount of work on this issue. And so we want to go through our presentation pretty quickly here, and Karen will be working with me on that. First, good evening, and just so you know, I'm Sandy Vargas. I'm the president of the Minneapolis Foundation, and I'm here to speak on behalf of a group of funders who have joined together in support of an ambitious early childhood agenda in Minnesota. I'd like to make sure that you have a written document of the full proposal, and I think that you have that in a packet. So I will just go through the slides very, very quickly. First, our coalition members. We are a diverse group of funders, not only in the Twin Cities, but throughout the state of Minnesota. And as a matter of fact, to develop this proposal, we had the eight names that are up on the screen there, but we also have many more that are going to join the coalition. There are other nonprofits and other business partners that we see joining the coalition also. So we think that this is a very, very important priority for the state of Minnesota. Just to introduce the policy, we want you to know first and foremost that we share the commitment to early childhood education and a commitment to every child being school ready by 2020. And that means every child. And we also want to extend a hand of partnership to you, because there are many of us that are working on this. We know that all of you have a high priority in the area, and it is demonstrated by the focus on QRIS, the quality rating information system, and the management system that you're examining right now, and also some of the bills that are coming forward, and we know that you're all active in that. Why are we doing this work? Why are we as funders doing this work? We have been long-term funders of the early childhood agenda, and we want to make a difference in the state. And I think the most important message that we want to leave you with is it's not only some kids. We want to make a difference for all kids in the state. And you've already had many presentations on what the differences in many groups of kids are. Our process is that we started this work over a year ago. We've had many changes in the foundation community, but all of us got together and said we really want to move the needle on this issue. So you just heard from Dr. Chase. He was part of making sure that we had a very good a literature review and array of resources that were examined. And the other questions that come up to us as foundations are, what is it that stands in the way of us moving forward as a state? Is it money? Is it political will? Is it the lack of a strategy? What is it? And so one of the things that we have come forward with is understanding that we need a framework, a common framework from which to operate. And I think that there are many programs in the state of Minnesota, many really great programs that have had very good outcomes. But in fact, we can't just move forward on programs. We have to have a framework where we work together in an organized way. To ensure that every child is ready for kindergarten by 2020, we think Minnesota needs three things: a comprehensive approach to early childhood care and education, accountability for measurable and sustained progress, and we think there are three elements that we need in our common framework. Those are leadership, accountability, and funding. Our proposed framework also endorses and builds on many of the programs and efforts currently underway. We are looking forward to all of the collaboration in collaboration with all of our partners to implement our recommendations for all kids being ready. And I also want to say that this approach honors, and we've heard already about the important role of the parents. And so they do need to be play a central role. So again, all of the programs that you've heard have had very excellent outcomes. We're talking about a common framework that organizes at a statewide level. So just to talk about the policy agenda, our proposed policy agenda, I want to say the areas are leadership, accountability, and funding. And we think that the order is intentional because we believe that each one drives the other. We often lead with money and the question of money. That's something that comes up to you. It comes up to us as foundations. What we also think, though, is that we think we need leadership within an accountability framework, and so in addition to the funding that we're talking about in terms of needs. So what are we talking about in terms of the leadership? Well, the first recommendation that we'd like to make is that we propose the creation of a cabinet-level agency focused on early childhood. A Minnesota Office of Early Learning or a state agency with the same focus and role. And what we're talking about there is to really align the focus on early childhood. We also think that there needs to be an accountability in this office or whatever the entity is for ensuring that the quality of early childhood care and education has a systemic approach and assessments that really measure state progress towards the 2020 goal of all children being school ready. Leadership. What do we mean by leadership? Well, obviously, there's high-level policy and funding leadership. We're talking about you as the Minnesota legislature. We're also talking about the executive branch. We also have a number of supporters of leadership, or supportive leadership, as we call it, and that's the Minnesota Early Childhood Advisory Council, those of us in the philanthropic community, advocacy groups, and the business community. Again, we're talking about leadership at all levels from different sectors of the community. Accountability. Well, there is a number of accountability principles that we've got in front of you. The first is that not just some children, but 100% of the children ages 0 to 5 must be ready for school by 2020. And we need to establish benchmarks so that we can measure our progress towards that overall goal. And I know that you, as legislators, have adopted that goal. We also need to align state budget allocations with the policy goal. And that really means that we are trying to make sure that everyone meets systemic standards. Number three, we want to formally adopt the five domains of school readiness. This is work that's already been done, and it's something that needs to be done throughout the state. Number four is something that has been talked about quite a bit, that a culturally appropriate approach is absolutely necessary for screening and assessment. And then, as Dr. Chase talked about, the integrated approach, we're talking about a whole child approach, not just education, but a wraparound approach for each child and their families.
We're starting to run out of time.
I know you're going as quickly as you can.
But.
Accountability, we want to make sure that there is accountability in the system on a statewide level. What we're talking about there is a statewide report card. We measure the progress of how we're doing to make sure that kids are ready for school. We're also talking about screening and assessment of all children, not just a few, not just a sample of all children, and then a consistent quality rating system, which has already had a lot of work. And I do want to mention that we're talking about providers from all sectors making sure that they have the kind of technical assistance in order to get into a consistent quality care system themselves, whether it's a family or whether it's an organization. The accountability statewide report card It provides an accountability framework. It reports on an annual basis, and it's a guide in decision-making for funding. You know a lot already about the quality rating and improvement system, so I won't say much more about that except that it builds on the strengths of Parent Aware, the QRIS, and that's something that we'd love to integrate and see in here. And then it includes all children starting at age 3. Because one of the issues that came up already is that we may assess kids, but if there isn't an intervention prior to them becoming kindergartners earlier, they won't be ready for school. So that intervention at age 3 or 4 needs to happen. And so that's something that we're advocating. Let me just turn now to, let's go on to the chart that you have in front of you, because this is obviously a 10-year timeline, and I want to just mention a few things about this timeline. As you see in 2010, what we're proposing is the launch of the QRIS statewide. We're also proposing the establishment of a report card. Assessments at ages 3, 4, and 5 to ensure that all kids are ready, and then a public information campaign. Those are all starting sometime this year. This is an ambitious agenda, but we'd really advocate that this needs to happen. We also, in the next biennium, would propose the establishment of an Office of Early Learning. And I do want to say that we can't just establish the office, that there has to be accountability, there has to be funding, there has to be the authority to align and bring those programs together so that they hit the mark, that they actually make sure that kids are progressing on the path to being school ready by the time that they hit kindergarten. So with that, let me leave you with three messages. First of all, again, we'd love to work in partnership with the legislature, with you, and we know that we have already started that conversation, so we'd like to continue that conversation. We have brought some resources to the table over the years, and foundations probably spend in the neighborhood of about $20 million a year in early childhood in Minnesota. But we know that the heavy lifting has to come from the public sector, because we cannot, even with all of the resources together, make sure that all of the things that we've proposed to you tonight can be sustainable. And the other thing I want to tell you, and that we as coalition members really feel, is that this agenda can be accomplished. We're prepared to stay in to supporting and advocating for early childhood for the long term. You see a 10-year plan. We're committed to it. We're committed to working in partnership with you and with all others that are interested in making sure all of our kids are ready for school by the time that they make kindergarten. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I know it's kind of hard to come in at the end of the hearing and then do this gigantic plan. We members, we likely will have you back right. to committee to talk to the committee about this. Part of to the audience and to the members, what we're doing here is trying to expose people to what's been going on in the field. And I know Minneapolis Foundation, along with the group of early childhood funders, has worked really hard on this for about a year.
That's
and
right.
Karen Kelly Arula has worked very hard, and we appreciate her leadership and yours, Sandy Vargas, on this, and we look forward to a continued conversation. It's something we need, that vision, kind of like Representative Greiling has the Minnesota Miracle in her area, is we need our early childhood Minnesota Miracle, and I think we have to think about this and other things we're doing and make that come together as well. So thank you. We're going to have to wrap up.
Thank
so
you
if you have
much.
Questions, members, I know Sandy's available by email, or I can stay maybe a few minutes for
Absolutely.
Questions.
That's
thank
right.
you. And thank you. As promised, I'm going to have, as our last person, Ms. Bartek, would you like to come up and say a few words? I want to thank during the transition, thank everybody for coming. I know it's hopefully doesn't take you as long to get home as it took you to get here. We're hoping the traffic is down by now, and I really appreciate it. And I appreciate the Bloomington folks and Edina, all the work you did to make this happen. I think, speaking as the chair, but I think on behalf of the members, we're very impressed. And you show us a great model on how to close the achievement gap and how to do early childhood programs successfully. So we really appreciate you having us here tonight.
Yeah, I just want to comment. I'm really proud of both communities, Edina and Bloomington. While there are similarities in the approach and there's differences, they do a magnificent job of getting to kids and getting them ready for school. And I want to thank Tom and Kay and Cheryl. You truly are inspirational, and your work makes a difference in people's lives every day. And that is really, really important, and thank you for that.
Thank you. With that, if you'd like to introduce yourself, and welcome to the committee.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Kim Bartik. I am a licensed in-home child care provider of over 20 years, as well as director of the Bloomington Family Child Care Association and president of the Hennepin County Licensed Providers Association. I'm all nervous, sorry. I just wanted you to know this is my chosen profession, and most of us that are in it have chosen it as a profession. It's not something to do just while our children are getting ready for school. We have chosen it as our profession, and we're very proud of what we do. I myself am proud to offer an early childhood education program, as well as be a parent mentor to the families in my care. Providers in Bloomington are very fortunate. I'm not quite sure how it is in other communities, but here in Bloomington, we're fortunate to have excellent relationships with the different community services that are available, as well as the elementary schools in our area. We do see firsthand the differences that the early childhood funding does make in Bloomington, especially as our younger community members are becoming more and more culturally diverse. The information that Kay Miller provided kind of speaks to all that. We all have the same goal of preparing our children for kindergarten. We need to make sure that they are ready socially as well as academically. Kindergarten will basically be their introduction to the formal school system, and we need to ensure that this will be a success and a pleasant experience for them, as well as this will dictate their attitudes toward their academic experiences in the future. That's it. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And we, when we're putting, I just wanted to say to everybody, when we put these hearings together, we come to different people and we collaborate, and every once in a while, we didn't get you in right on the official agenda, so I appreciate you bringing that to our attention. And childcare is really, really important, and I think that as legislators, we need to continue to hear that. It's education, and you're affecting as many kids or more kids. The statistics, Representative Peterson and I were at a meeting today. I mean, more kids are in-home family childcare in Minnesota, I think, than almost any other state, and the proportion of centers to in-home that we have few, it's like a third, two-thirds. It's huge. We have a huge number of kids in home child care, so it's really very important. So thank you.
Thank you.
Drive safely, everyone. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.